Hey everybody, it's Brandon with Cigars and Cinema, and I'm talking to you today before we start about one of our sponsors, Calypso Cigar Shop and Lounge in Richardson, Texas. These guys have been supporting our podcast for years, back in the day when it was the Calypso Cigar Review Show, and now as Cigars and Cinema, so we'd really appreciate it if you would support them. Give Matt over there at the Calypso Cigar Shop and Lounge a call at 972-761-9903 and order some cigars. And hey, if you happen to be in Richardson and you want to stop by, go by 1401 East Arapahoe Road, Suite E in Richardson, Texas, and talk to Matt yourself. It's a great shop full of great people and great cigars, and we appreciate the support. Now on to the show.
Cigars in Cinema.
Will you bring in the cigars, please?
The movie review podcast that tackles the smoky side of cinema.
Cigar, mate!
Each week, we review a movie that contains, in some way, shape, or form, someone smoking a cigar.
Cigars.
Fire is good.
We'll talk about who smoked it, where they smoked it, how they smoked it, and we'll probably make fun of them if they have no idea what they're doing.
What are you doing?
You never light a cigar that way.
So sit back, light up, and enjoy the podcast that has it all. Cigars.
Cigar. Smoke it.
Smoke it.
Movies.
Say hello to my little friend!
And General Mayhem.
My doggie! Wah!
Hey everybody, welcome to episode 3.
Trace.
Of Cigars in Cinema. I am Brandon Luna.
I'm Randy Rankin.
And today we're reviewing a war classic,
sort of.
Kind of,
pseudo modern war classic.
A modern classic, yes. Crimson Tide.
Nothing can stop the tide. The LA Times says Crimson Tide is full throttle tension that squeezes out your every last breath.
You repeat this order or I'll find somebody who will.
CBS TV says it's taut, tense, and terrific.
I'm assuming command of this ship.
You're not assuming anything.
And Siskel and Ebert give two thumbs up to the summer's most thrilling in-your-face smash hit.
Bluff Captain Ramsey in his stateroom. They're fueling our missiles.
Now!
Crimson Tide, rated R, now playing at a theater. Near you.
Great Gene Hackman.
We love Gene Hackman, by the way.
And the really good Denzel Washington.
Yes, you mentioned that before. Why?
We'll get to it when we do the review.
Okay.
Because it has to do with the movie. One of the best well-acted movies I've ever seen as far as from an action movie standpoint.
So this movie was a product of the 90s, and the producer...
Cold War was still kind of fresh.
The producers, mega group that is Bruckheimer Simpson.
Yeah.
They did a crap ton of movies in the 80s and 90s that were all these, like, you know, definitive action movies that all looked like
big
they were...
budget.
You know, yeah. Just like...
The world's going to end if this doesn't happen.
Exactly. And they all kind of came off that whole MTV style of things with the quick cuts and the great lighting and all the crazy stuff that you'd see in MTV. So it was kind of that movement of filmmaking.
Yeah. And, of course, it takes place on a submarine.
It does. It does.
And usually I don't like claustrophobic movies.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, let me rephrase. I do like claustrophobic movies. I just like claustrophobic movies that don't feel... claustrophobic, if that makes sense. But this one has to feel that way. It's in a submarine. Sorry.
Yeah.
It's going to feel that way.
Yeah.
But it needs to. And it kind of adds to the dimension.
I think they did a better job of... I mean, to me, the best movie that really makes you feel claustrophobic for a submarine movie that was made recently was probably Das Boot. And you feel like it's a really small... Like the inside of a submarine should look.
Yeah.
Hunt for October went the opposite. It looks huge.
Yeah,
it looks like an
aircraft carrier.
Yeah, I mean, I always thought the set of that looked like the set of the Enterprise. It's like, let's take the Enterprise set and change up, make it look like it was just too
right,
big.
Yeah.
You know? And this one scales it back a little bit.
Right.
There's pipes in the way and stuff in the way, so you can tell they try
to make it
look small.
And people are ducking and stuff. You know, it's cool.
Exactly.
We'll set it up a little bit. It's Gene Hackman, who's a legendary captain of in the Navy, in the submarine division. You notice I'm very military eloquent. He's very proud of his ship and very proud of his crew. He's very passionate about the Navy.
Yep.
And the new boy comes along, Denzel Washington, who's hoping to get his own boat someday.
Yep.
And
Gene Hackman's got a cool name, Captain Ramsey.
I know. That's awesome. Yep. That's awesome. And he and Denzel clash over... What had happened was, according to the movie, now I don't know if this is true, I've been told yes, I've been told no by several other military people, that at the time, according to the movie, a nuclear sub commander was and the president were the only two people who had the authority to initiate nuclear strikes. And there's a transmission that comes through that Russia's getting ready to strike America with nuclear weapons. So they're supposed to launch their own.
Yep.
Well, the transmission stops halfway, and so it's not a complete message.
Well, they get the first one.
Yeah, they get the first one. Yeah.
And then they get the second one, and it's incomplete.
Yeah.
And the difference is you got, you know, Ramsey, who's like hardcore, old school. Like
protocol says you go with the full message.
Yeah, we got a message. That's you know, broken. Mm-hmm. That's a broken code. We don't know if that could be, you know, something from the bad guys trying to trick us. You know, we don't know what this is.
Right. So we go with the first one. It's a complete one. We go with it. Well, Denzel is acting. You know, he's like, XO. Wait a minute. He's the XO. He's like, let's find out. You know, let's wait and see. And he's like, Hackman's like, you don't have time. What I love about this movie is that they're both right,
uh-huh,
and they're both wrong.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, this is where I get into my Denzel rant. This is when Denzel got preachy to me.
Yeah.
Seemed like all his roles from that point on were he was the moral fiber of every decision to be made. It didn't matter if it was that football movie he did or whatever, everything. Denzel is the moral compass for uh-huh everything. And it kind of started in this movie. And I do like it that, you know, Hackman kind of gets his own, you know, comeuppance too.
They both do. Yeah.
Yeah. And they both get scolded at the end of the movie. But it's just very intense. You know, there's mutiny takes mm-hmm place. Well acted. Just, I mean, some of the scenes were when they're in each other's faces. It's just like, how do you do that? Because, you know, like 5 minutes before, they were probably sitting in their chairs, eating lunch, shooting the shit. And now they're in each other's faces, you know, sweat flying off your, you know, but it's so intense and it's so believable. It's so awesome.
Yeah, it's very, very well acted. And this, you know, this comes out of Tony Scott, you know, who's the director on this.
Is he the one that killed himself?
He was the one that, yeah, he committed suicide in 2012, which is very sad. Mm-hmm. He was part of the Scott brothers.
Ridley Scott and Tony Scott.
Ridley Scott did the more transcendental kind of thought-provoking movies with Alien and stuff like that, where it was, you know, you don't, it's, you know, Blade Runner, that type of mm-hmm thing, you yeah know, with this little more, I guess, brainy kind of mm-hmm sci-fi things. And then Tony was like, I'm going to do the opposite. So he just mm-hmm did the popcorny Top Gun type stuff, yeah, you know.
I mean, although he did do a small movie that I love.
Okay.
Revenge.
Yeah.
Kevin Costner. I knew you were tiny movie. That. No, yeah, but it is a tiny movie for him.
Yeah.
But it's good.
So, I mean, he started off with The Hunger in 83. That was yeah really his kind of, you know, first movie foray into filmmaking. Mm-hmm. And it was very MTV. It looked like a music video. It had David Bowie as a vampire, blah, blah, blah.
I remember that.
It was
that,
a cheesy
yeah
movie. But, it, you know, it was what set him up and gave him Top Gun. You know, so mm-hmm then Top Gun was a huge hit for him in 86. Then he went on to do Beverly Hills Cop 2 in 87, Revenge in 90, mm-hmm, Days of Thunder, which was Top Gun Part 2, basically, with cars. Last Boy Scout, which is one of our favorite Bruce
yes
Willis movies in
love
91,
movie.
Yep. And then True Romance in 93, which is probably the best movie that Quentin Tarantino wrote that he didn't direct.
Right.
And then Crimson Tide. So he had a really good track record of making very good movies.
Yeah, he had a good run.
That had, you know, great visual style to them, mm-hmm, good amount of content that was actually substance. It wasn't all flash on mm-hmm top of it. Probably, you know, when you get into the flash stuff, you're looking at The Hunger, Top Gun, Days of Thunder,
yeah,
to a degree, Beverly Hills Cop, but, you know, there's still mm-hmm fun movies, you know,
yeah,
so... He did it all. He had a great track record, and he made a lot of good movies. Unfortunately, committed suicide, which is sad.
That's terrible.
But this movie was kind of a launching point for a lot of people. And Viggo Mortensen
yeah
was in this.
Yeah, great cast.
You know, Gandolfini, who yeah was like 300 pounds lighter than he was in Sopranos,
exactly,
probably.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just crazy.
Barely recognizable.
Yeah. Still, you know, you can see his face, and mm-hmm he has the Gandolfini looks that he always gives, that evil kind of look that he gave. And, you know, obviously Tony Scott like worked with him because he worked with him in True Romance.
Right.
That was really the first movie that I saw Gandolfini in that right I was like, oh, this guy's fucking good.
Yeah.
And I see True Romance, and he has that scene where he kicks the crap out of a, what's her name? Patricia Arquette.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And God, that scene's just brutal, man. Brutal scene. But he's such a great actor. And I think he's one of those guys that, you know, everybody thinks about Sopranos, and I really don't think he got his due.
I saw a movie with, I don't like Kristen Stewart much, but I saw a movie with her. And
that was a good movie, yeah.
Very
I saw
good
that
movie.
Yeah.
Boy, that movie had a lot of heart.
It did, yeah.
And you don't think of Gandolfini being an actor that portrays having a lot of heart, but he
yeah
did. I mean, I loved that guy in that movie. He was so
yeah
awesome in it.
Yeah, he was. Steve Zahn was in this. He had a couple of lines, not very
yeah
many.
Right.
But, you know, he's gone on to bigger things. Ryan Phillippe, who this is his first
wow
role.
Wow. Ryan Phillippe.
He's in the same scene with Steven Zahn. He's just looking at fish tank. You know,
is it Danny Nucci or something?
Yeah, Danny Nucci was in it, who went on to do greater things as well. So, yeah, but, you know, a little factoid.
I don't know for sure, but I think the dog was the same dog from Frasier. I remember hearing it at the time. I've never heard it confirmed or denied since. But
good dog actor.
Yeah, very, very good, good dog actor.
Eddie. It's funny because I say that, and I'm not trying to be funny, but there was a scene in the movie when he does, and this is spoiler alert, this movie's old as hell if you haven't
seen it. Came out in 95. Yeah. Come on.
We told you to watch it. You should have watched it before you listened to this. But there's a scene after, Denzel Washington basically, he takes over as a mutiny, sends Hackman back to his room, and as soon as he walks in the room, the dog is wagging its tail, and it stops.
Yeah, the dog senses like, oh shit, this isn't good.
I was like, that, little factoid like that. I'm like,
That's great directing.
It's like, wonder what that director did to make that dog. It's probably like, treat? The dog's like, oh fuck. But I mean, it could have been anything. That was just like, I saw that and I was like, oh, that's a cool moment.
Yeah.
Hackman sits down, starts looking through the file like, that motherfucker,
Yeah, it's, my dad was in the Navy and my grandfather was in the Navy. So the pageantry at the beginning before they get ready to go underwater, it's awesome. I got chills. I mean, because my dad would tell me about those kind of moments that you would have. And even though my dad hated being on a boat, which, why were you in the Navy, Dad? But never really,
he
hated being on a boat. But he said he would even get chills and would tear up, before they'd set sail like they're a sailboat or something. But, before they take off. And it's just, just that pageantry, it just, you can't help but get sucked into it,
Yeah.
And it's kind of like a football game, the coach gets you pumped up before the game. You can't help but fall for it, And so I love that scene. That was great. And Crimson Tide, because the submarine's called the USS Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, Alabama football is the Crimson Tide.
Oh, is that what it was?
Yeah.
I know, I'm just kidding.
And, and the war cry for the Crimson Tide football team is Roll Tide.
Yeah.
So they did that Roll Tide thing. It was kind of cool. That was awesome. Yeah,
and you got to know Gene Hackman picked this script because he had a lot of really good speeches in it. I mean, he had about three or four of just, epic monologues, in this thing.
Hackman, I could, there could be a Hackman movie on.
Yep.
And I could be like making me a peanut butter sandwich. And Hackman would say something like, put that down. And I would just do it. He just has this authority in his voice that
he
just means something. Something's about to happen. I'm going to quit making my sandwich now because he might have been talking to me and I don't want to piss him off.
And he is one of those actors. We talked about this in the last episode, actors who mostly did drama that did comedy with Paul Newman on Butch Cassidy. And how it seemed like he was funny, but it seemed like he maybe was a little uncomfortable with it.
Yeah.
Hackman did both. He flew between both like a champ.
Young Frankenstein was genius.
Young Frankenstein, which has a great cigar scene. We'll review that eventually. Yeah, yeah. You look at Birdcage. You look at any number of things.
I hate
Welcome to Mooseport.
Yeah, jeez. So sad to end your career that way, Gene. Come on, one more.
But he did really good at comedy.
He was good. And he was great. And think about it.
Lex Luthor.
His Lex Luthor was hilarious.
It was a
comedic
role.
Lex Luthor was hilarious. And yeah, so Hackman, and it's a breeze for him.
Effortless.
Didn't seem like it was any big deal.
The guy just exuded coolness and he was just a really cool, great actor.
And and Denzel is a great actor. I'm not going to say he's not a great actor. And I'm not going to say I dislike him. I actually do like Denzel. I just get a little tired of the preachiness from time to time.
Yeah.
But, Training Day, he was excellent in it.
Mm. Another Tony Scott movie that he did that I actually liked a lot was Man on Fire. I thought he was really good
in
Man on Fire.
Yes. Oh,
great movie.
My wife couldn't talk for 30 minutes after that movie.
Yeah.
That movie disturbed her. It moved her so much I was like, what's up? She's like, she just hold her hand up like, I can't talk right now.
Yeah. That's a great flick. That's a great flick.
I didn't know Tony Scott did that one.
Yep. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, he did.
And to see two heavyweights like that just go at it, that's just... That's when I get excited about a movie, when it's the acting. I just want to see the acting. And it was just great, Hackman just has these nuances about him that just, it really seems so effortless. It's like he's not reading a script. It's almost like Hackman ad-libs everything. I'm not saying he does. It just seems that way because everything just flows from him like nothing.
Yeah.
Like, water
like
out of a
butter.
Faucet. Yeah,
it's like butter. Yeah. It's not like he's not reciting lines. At no point when you see a performance from Hackman do you think he's reciting lines. Mm-hmm. It always seems very real.
Yeah.
Just it's in the moment. Yeah. And I think when you have a good actor like Denzel Washington, even Vigo and these other guys playing off of it, it mm-hmm. feels very real.
Yeah.
And, you get caught up in the movie and it is very effective,
mm-hmm.
especially being in those close quarters and mm-hmm. Knowing that they can't go anywhere and, they have to resolve this. It's just it's a great, great flick. So to talk to the cigar smoking in this film, because there's a lot of it, Gene Hackman is the cigar smoker in the film. Now, Denzel does partake.
He does give him a cigar at one point. Yes,
so at the 5-minute mark, Gene Hackman lines up a cigar, and that's when he's talking to Denzel about taking the job. Mm-hmm. And I love some of the lines in there. He's like, you know, you've made a short list, and he's like, no, he's like, you're on the list of people to replace my last XO. And he's like, oh, thank you very much, sir. He's like, it's a short list. Like, don't thank me too much.
Yeah, know, it's just, and I have a lot of choices here.
Yeah, exactly.
You know. And then he has that line where he says,
at the 17-minute mark, yeah.
Takes a puff on a cigar, blows it out, and he says, I don't trust air that I can't see.
Don't trust air I can't see. Yeah. Yep. And then Gene Hackman smokes with Denzel. He's like, this is your rite of passage. You got to smoke with me. So they're outside the boat before they go under, and they smoke a cigar together. And Denzel's looking a little green in the gills, and he's like, it's your first one? He's like, yeah. He's like, don't like it too much. It's more expensive than drugs. Which technically it is a drug. Is. But it's still a good line.
Yeah, we all know that. Yep. But... Now, okay, so we talked about this. The close quarters of being in a submarine. Seriously, there is no salary on the planet that would get me to stay in a sub for 6 months. I couldn't do it. I just wouldn't do it. It wouldn't work. I wouldn't last a week.
Yeah.
Wouldn't last 2 days, probably. But the air, I mean, just
the fact that you're breathing the same air as everybody
people's
else.
Farts. And you know,
bad breath. You know, someone has halitosis, or
and if you're smoking a cigar,
exactly. No, I can't. I was trying to look up to see if that's actually. I mean, they allow people to smoke on.
I don't think they do anymore. I think they did at one point.
It has to be something that went away because that's like, wow, that's kind of weird that they would allow them to do that.
Nothing. I'm a big secondhand smoke believer, but I think in a submarine, definitely that would be an issue.
Yep. But Gene Hackman does smoke cigars again at the 21-minute mark. And then this is during the dinner scene when everybody's talking about war in general, and he gets his opinion of war.
Another great scene.
Another great scene.
That's where you get to find out who Gene Hackman is.
Yep.
Or who Captain Ramsey is.
And this is where you start. I mean, you see there's moments before that where you see that they're going to butt heads, but that's really the moment where you see that they're on different wavelengths.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. Yeah.
They're on different wavelengths. And then there's that moment later when he calls out the order for the thing, and it was the fire. They had the fire in the galley that caused the death, and that's when Gene Hackman decides to do the drill.
Mm-hmm.
And Denzel's like, he's doing a drill now, and he freaks out.
Died,
he's like, he's like, there's a fire. It could spark up again. Someone, someone got hurt. So he goes up there, and they're doing the drill, and he's calling the drills, and Denzel's like, hey, there's a fire. It might spark up again. He's like, looks at him and just says, and he does the drill thing, and then Gene Hackman gives him that look like, motherfucker,
don't challenge me.
Yeah,
don't
I was just like, me, that man. Was the moment I'm like, oh shit,
I'm the fucking boss. Yeah. You shut up.
And then he takes him over to that room and has a little discussion with him. You know, he says that great line. He's like, we're here to protect democracy, not practice it.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yes. In other words, this is a dictatorship.
Yeah.
But we're going to protect democracy. That's what we're doing here.
I'm the dick, you're the tater, and this is my ship.
Exactly. And you know, we've played sports, we've all done that, we've all worked in business. It has to be that way.
It really does.
Has to be the one person that the decision has to fall upon. And you know, if you're going to question it, that's fine, but question it off to the side. You know, say, hey, this is my opinion. But if he didn't like your opinion, sorry, it's his call.
Yep, exactly.
And that's the problem I have with Denzel sometimes, most of the time. Wait a minute, you're not the boss here. He's the boss.
Exactly.
You might be right.
That was
but it's not your call.
That was the character. I mean, that's a character flaw that character actually has, that he challenges him in front of all the other people.
Yeah, exactly.
When he should have done it. You know, it's like, let's go ahead and do this, but then I'll say, hey, my piece, you know, I just want to let you know I didn't agree with what you did. He's like, sorry, but that's the way I do things. If you don't like it, you know, get off the ship. He says that at one point.
Exactly.
Yeah, he's off the ship. The morale's kind of low. I think we need to talk to these guys. All right. Gets on the comm. He's like, her morale's low. If you don't like it, get off the damn ship.
Exactly. I'm not saying everything Hackman does is great, because he's an ass.
He is.
He's a total ass. But I think he senses that he's losing control. And he's never had that. You get that from him. He's never had this before.
Yeah.
He's never had people question him. Certainly not in the way Denzel's doing it.
No.
And he's not going to handle it well, because he's never done it before.
Yep.
And so he's pissed. And so he does kind of act like a baby from time to time. But he still has to be... He has to put up that front, you know, that, hey, this is my guys. I can't lose control of my guys because of this jackwagon challenging me on everything, you know.
And you can see that moment when Gene loses it, when he's like, this is my ship, and shut your fucking mouth.
He screams at him.
It's like, finally, shit.
Yeah, he loses it. Out of nowhere, he's like, you shut the fuck up.
It's like, I was like, oh, God.
Yeah, totally loses it. Totally against his character, but it.
And
it's
Denzel's
the way
face
he felt
is
that
classic,
one.
Too, because you can see him just like, oh, you son of a bitch. You know? Can't believe you just fucking said that to me in front of all these guys. You know?
Now, there was that scene with the flood and at the shelter. And we watched that scene together, and I got chills. The way Denzel handled that scene was awesome. Because he's on the mic, everyone knows this person just died, and he just says, I don't remember what he said, but kind of like, let's just, you know, think about that.
Yeah.
Or something like that. And
it's, you know, it's moments before that when Gene Hackman, when he finally, you know, when he kicked Gene Hackman out of his seat, basically, and took, you know, took over the submarine, where Gene Hackman's like, you can't make the tough, you're not ready to make the tough decisions. Mm-hmm. But he did. He did make the tough decisions.
Yeah, he did.
And that's why it leads to the to the end that they had, you know.
Yeah.
So a lot of people don't know this, but Quentin Tarantino was actually brought in to punch up the script of the film. And they're saying that a lot of the stuff that he added, they kind of cut. They cut back on it because it's, you know, at that point, Quentin Tarantino is Quentin Tarantino. Everything sounds like Tarantino. Yeah. The stuff that did stay was there. And it's extraneous. It doesn't need to be in the movie. But it holds with later in the film as to why these guys would back Denzel. Mm-hmm. There's a moment when they have a fight in the galley.
Yeah.
And Denzel questions the guy. He's like, what the fuck was that about? Why are you fighting? He's like, ah, it's stupid. I don't want to talk about it. He's like, no, you need to tell me. I'm asking you. You need to tell me. And he's like, ah, fighting about Silver Surfer. I said this is the real Silver Surfer, and he said this other guy's real Silver Surfer.
That's like,
it's such a stupid, stupid reason to fight.
Yeah.
But Denzel's like, you know, that's, you know, you could be, you know, the next guy, and you could, you know, move up the ranks, but you got to, you know, stop the shit and, you know, realize, you know, think about before you do stuff like that. And everybody knows that guy's the real Silver Surfer.
Right.
So that was kind of funny, but it, you know, did it need to be there? Not necessarily.
No,
but
it didn't. And this was back in, I mean, I don't go to many movies now, anyways. Back in the day, when I came out, I didn't ever go to a movie. Mm. Well, that's a lie. But it was rare. It was still rare. I'd see maybe two a year.
Yeah.
And that was one that I had to go see. And a buddy of mine named Jack, he wanted to go see, what was that Dustin Hoffman movie? Outbreak or something?
Yeah.
I think it came out about the same time. And I said, no, I want to see Crimson Tide instead. And so we went to see that and loved it. And seeing that on the big screen was awesome. Did you see it in the theater?
Yeah, I saw it in the theater.
Yeah, it was awesome.
I'll see anything Gene Hackman. The only thing I didn't see in the theater that Gene Hackman was in that I can remember is probably Welcome to Mooseport. I saw Birdcage in the theater, too.
Did you? Really?
Yeah.
Okay, back to what I was going to say. And it's not because I'm homophobic, because you know as well as I do that I'm not.
Yeah.
I just never thought drag was funny. I just don't think guys dressing in drag is funny. I just don't. It's not funny to me. Sorry. It's not. And it's been a sight gag for years. I mean, that's an old vaudeville thing. I mean, guys in drag supposed to be funny. But in Birdcage, seeing Gene Hackman in drag actually made me laugh.
Exactly. He looked totally uncomfortable, too. It's about probably the least comfortable he's ever looked on screen when he was in drag in that movie.
And Gene Hackman is a huge Dallas Cowboys fan, or at least he was.
Yeah, I heard that.
He and the reason why was in the 60s when they were doing Bonnie and Clyde here in Dallas, he's a big football fan. And he just called Tex Schramm and said, I'm an actor, nobody knows me, I haven't done much, but is there any chance I can come watch Cowboys practice? Tex Schramm rolled out the red carpet for him and, you know, let him read a playbook and all this kind of stuff. And they treated him like he was a star, and he wasn't.
Yeah, that's cool.
And so it's like, I'm a Cowboys fan now. You know, in that movie, The Replacements, he wore a fedora to emulate Tom Landry. So that's kind of cool.
That is way cool, yeah.
Yeah.
And the last time that Gene Hackman lights up in this movie is at the 1 hour, 40 minute mark. When they have the last speech that talks to the thing that everybody thought was coming, and it's going to be a race thing. I really kind of, I think that's a Quentin Tarantino speech, too, about the Lippensanger stallions, you know, that they're the best stallions in the world, and they're all white. I was like, oh, come on, guys, you had to go there.
Yeah, they did.
He's like, yeah, they're not from there, they're from Spain, and
see, that was
they're
what,
born black.
That's one thing I loved about that movie, was that it wasn't a race movie at all.
Yeah.
And then they threw that in at the end. It's like, oh, come on. You did a really good job of not making this about race. It was about chain of command and the lack of respect for chain of command.
Exactly.
And then you had to turn it into a race thing. It's like, oh, come on.
But I liked it at the very end, though, after the hearing and everything, and Gene Hackman actually recommends him to take over the boat, which was cool.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, you were right, by the way. And you know, Denzel's like, what? He's like, about the stallions. They're from Spain. He's like, not about anything else. It's just awesome. That's fucking great.
That's awesome. And I like the speech that Jason Robards gives. Where at the hearing, pretty much he undresses both of them. Like,
He really does. Yeah.
You know, this is not the way we're supposed to run this operation. And you know,
off the record, you guys both fucked up. Basically, is what he says. You know.
Exactly. So, no, excellent movie. If you haven't seen it, shame on you. Mm-hmm. And go see it now. Rent it, download it, whatever.
Yep.
Spend $39 for it. That's a callback to a previous episode.
Exactly.
But no, but watch it. That movie's excellent. I've probably seen it 10 times.
Fantastic movie. and lots of cigar smoking in there. So if you want to see Gene Hackman chew on a cigar and smoke on a cigar, that's definitely one you get. And I could never tell what he was smoking. It looked like
I thought it was a Cohiba at one point.
It looked like a band of a Cohiba at one point, but you really don't. There's not.
And then another time it looked like a Romeo and Juliet, but I couldn't tell.
He was doing a torpedo at one point. I knew that. The last speech when he does about the horses, that's the the one where he's smoking what looks like a torpedo. But oddly enough, a torpedo in a submarine. So.
Little correlation there.
Right. But yeah, great special effects, great cinematography, great score by Hans Zimmer. Mm-hmm. Just overall, fantastic movie.
You heard a bad Hans Zimmer score?
There's a couple of them.
I haven't heard any bad ones, really. But then again, you've seen more movies than I do. Of that Magnus.
I know he was one of those guys when he started his career that he did a lot of stuff over. Like I know the score that he did for Commando, which is it's a fun movie, but it's really a crappy Schwarzenegger movie. Mm-hmm. He used in another movie. I'm like, oh come on, that's the same score. Oh, did he score? He just reused some of your score, dude. That's kind of
lazy.
What's
his name that did Sergio Leone? What's his name?
Crap, what's that guy's name?
He used a lot of
Nero.
He used a lot of his same stuff.
Before. Yeah, he did. Yeah,
but. A lot of people don't know this. You think Lion King, most people think Elton John. Uh-huh. Elton John's just worth the songs. Uh-huh. Hans Zimmer actually did the score for The Lion King.
That is correct.
And won an Academy Award for it.
Yep. The guy's won Academy Awards.
Yeah.
Danny Elfman has not, for some reason. One of my favorite score guys, but he just never really...
I like him. I do like John Williams a lot. Every Superman movie should still have the Superman theme in some way, shape, or form.
Oh, yeah.
I don't
for
care.
Sure.
And so, I can't remember, did they use it in...
No, I don't think they did. In the
Man
new
of Steel?
One? I don't think they did. No.
That's bullshit.
It's been a long time since I've seen that. I caught part of it on cable the other day, but I didn't watch the whole thing in the hotel.
That movie's a beating.
So here's the some IMDb information about this movie. The U.S. Navy found the subject of the film objectionable and inaccurate. It refused to provide any assistance in the movie's film.
Yeah, I remember that.
And there's a scene in which the USS Alabama is diving for the first time out of deck. The footage is the real submarine submerging. Tony Scott had followed along in a copter, obtaining shots of the ship itself. When the captain of the Alabama requested that the helicopter cease filming, they submerged, which is what the director wanted anyway. So he got the shot he wanted.
I would think that if you've got a Navy submarine getting ready to submerge, that would be protected airspace, wouldn't it? Wouldn't you think?
You would think. Which might be why they told him not to do it. I don't know. Who knows? Yeah. But, this is total Denzel stuff right here. This is one of the reasons why I think he's a good actor, but I think he's annoying as a person. Mm-hmm. According to a 1995 Premiere Magazine article, when Quentin Tarantino visited the set, Washington confronted him about his use of the word, the N-word, in his movies. Tarantino got embarrassed and wanted to move the conversation to a more private area, but Washington said, no, if we're going to discuss it, let's discuss it now. Mm-hmm. Washington later said that he felt that Tarantino was a fine artist.
Okay. Well, I'll give Denzel credit. He's a huge superstar. But you don't hear much about his private life, which is awesome. That means, obviously, he keeps his nose clean. He seems to be a good family guy. Uh-huh. One thing I did hear about him, and I'll get the details kind of wrong, but this is kind of what I remember hearing. He was touring, this was right after 9/11, and he was touring an Air Force base down in San Antonio. We drive by that one all the time.
Yeah.
It's by MAMS, actually.
Yeah, it's right by MAMS.
And he was touring it, and talking about the barracks, and they were like, we don't really have enough room, and blah, 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 and said, how much would it cost to build a new barracks? And they gave him a number, and he wrote him a check right there.
Wow.
That's cool.
That is way cool.
Yeah.
How would you feel about Al Pacino playing the role of Ramses?
No. I don't want Al Pacino playing any role. I can't stand him.
Al Pacino was offered the role to play Ramsey. Warren Beatty was also interested in the movie. Simpson and Bruckheimer went through a long period of trying to convince him to sign on before both parties moved on.
I could see Beatty playing it. I'm not a big Beatty fan, but I could see him pulling it.
Val Kilmer was offered the role that Denzel Washington got, but he declined it years later, saying that that was one of the few roles he wished he'd taken.
Yeah, I'm sure.
Yep. There you go. The cigars that Ramsey smokes with Hunter at the beginning of the movie on their mission are made by Monte Cristo. The brand is both Cuban and Dominican, but two totally different companies. But Ramsey's more expensive than drugs comment implies that theirs were the Cuban-made variety. Ramsey's cigar of choice throughout the movie is the classic tapered Monte Cristo number 2.
Nice. Okay.
So thank you, IMDb.
That's cool.
That's way cool. You were saying.
Don't remember.
Love it.
It's just different things. And, it's a dead horse, but it's still interesting. In a perfect world, Clint Eastwood wanted Denzel to play the Costner part. Uh-huh. And I don't remember why it didn't happen, but I would have bought him. He would have been fine in that role. It would have been a good role for him. Yeah, Val Kilmer shouldn't have turned down any roles back then.
No.
He's paying for it now.
Yeah. I mean, that was right after Top Gun. He was still,
and Tombstone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It was right around that same time.
Yeah.
Yeah, he should have taken those roles. But well, what can you do? Andy Garcia was also an early choice for a role that was taken by Denzel. Tommy Lee Jones passed on the part that was offered to Gene Hackman as well.
He'd probably have pulled it off.
He would have pulled it off.
Yeah.
But, you know, Gene Hackman's awesome in that movie, so it's hard to...
It's the little things that Hackman does that just win me over all the time.
Gene Hackman's character wears a pink ball cap, similar to what director Tony Scott wears on the set. That's funny. So
that's
he just
cool.
did that as a... Jason Robards, who plays the Admiral in the inquiry scene, actually served in the Navy during World War II and received the Navy Cross. So that's cool.
That's cool.
And Brad Pitt and Tom Cruise were also considered for the role that Denzel Washington took.
Oh, if Tom Cruise had been in it, it would have ruined the movie.
Yeah, it would have been overacted.
Yeah.
That was Tom Cruise in his overacting phase.
Yeah.
He was just like screaming everything. This is not the truth. I want the trout. You can't handle it.
Sorry.
That was like the most awful rendition of that scene.
Did we degrade that scene?
We just totally.
We just pissed on it, wiped our asses with it, and
exactly.
shit on it afterwards.
Exactly. But what we're not going to shit on is this movie, because this movie's badass, and you need to watch it. It's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
So if you have not seen this film for whatever reason, stop what you're doing now
and watch.
Well,
after our show.
Well, yeah.
Finish our show first.
Exactly. So we're going to take a little break. We'll come back for the second, third. We're going to do a little movie news, and then we'll come back and talk about the next film that we're going to be reviewing. Oh, wait, are we doing that?
Yeah.
Are we?
Yeah.
We have movie news?
Yes, we do. Well, we're not movie news. No, but I have something I want to talk about.
Oh, okay. We have something to talk about in the second
half. It has to do with acting.
Oh, interesting.
Interesting.
We'll be back. All right, we're back for the next segment, and instead of doing movie news this time, we're just going to talk about some stuff, because we're kind of doing these in advance so we don't have the lull in the episodes that we've had previously, and I'll be doing a couple of episodes on my own on the road just to cover some of the movies that I know Randy will never ever watch, even if I force him to, so you'll have some extra content there as well, but we won't be able to tell you what those are, so you know, just look at the name of the episode, and if you want to watch that movie before you listen to that episode, go that route. Mm-hmm. So what did you want to discuss, Randy?
Okay, well, you mentioned two of my hot buttons as far as acting styles. There's certain people that just overact, and I can't stand it. I hate overacting.
Okay.
And I'll clarify it by, notice the list of people I'm about to say.
Okay.
These are my favorite actors, in no particular order. Hackman excluded because he doesn't fit with the rest of them, but Jimmy Stewart, mm-hmm. Paul Newman,
okay.
Cary Grant,
all right.
Kevin Costner, all pretty much... under actors.
Okay.
And they're effective to me. I like that style. The people that drive me nuts, Al Pacino. I think he overacts everything he says. Everything he says, it's like he's trying to give you an acting class while he's saying his words. Drives me nuts.
Yep.
Tom Cruise, overactor. And as we discuss, more people will pop into my head. But to me, it's more effective when I'm watching acting to feel like I'm in that role, not in that role as an actor, but I'm in that role as a person, that this is happening to me.
Mm-hmm.
And how would I say certain things? And those are the kind of actors that I respond to.
Yeah.
Kurt Russell, even to a certain degree, I think he overacts at times, but he also gets it too, where he's...
A movie that I thought he, probably one of his best performances that not a lot of people saw,
mm-hmm.
Was Breakdown.
I thought
it was like
a great movie.
You know, on the level acting-wise, he didn't really overdo anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's great, you know, just overall great performance from him. And
he was very Dennis Weaver-like in that, in Duel. He was,
exactly.
Because he was the villain. He was the villain. He was the victim.
Yeah.
And you felt it, you know, he sensed it. He didn't know what to do. He was trying to act outside his normal realm of what he's supposed to do, but he's got to get his wife back. So he's, you know, loved that performance.
And you can look at, you know, a director that used two of the actors that were on your list, both Cary Grant and Jimmy Stewart worked with Hitchcock a lot.
A lot, yeah.
And I think he liked those guys because they were very effective in that.
They were everyman.
Everyman actors that didn't push it too far.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even in like, you know, stuff like Rope or Vertigo,
mm-hmm.
where he did have to kind of, you know, go up level,
mm-hmm.
it was not to where it was like, holy shit, this is fake. You know, yeah, it always seemed like it was real. I mean, even the rear view mirror, which was the movie we're going to make.
Yeah.
Just a spinoff of that.
Yes, exactly.
Everything's looking, the whole murder
everyone acts like this.
He's stuck in a car. He's locked himself in his car, and he has to only look through the back of his rear view mirror to the murders that are happening behind him.
Right. Exactly.
But he can't drive away. He's stuck in the car.
Don't give away our script.
Damn it.
But that, to me, that's just more effective.
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
yeah,
that,
no, I get it. I get it. Yeah.
You know, that hoo-ah thing that Al Pacino does. Like, what the fuck is that? Who does that in real life?
Yeah.
Do you know anyone who acts that way in real life? You know?
Brandon Holsworth.
Yeah. Well, he's the exception to everything.
He's the great overactor. But that, I love him for it, though.
Yeah.
He's a personality, you know?
Exactly. But I got to punch him in the face. That was so awesome. Anyway.
But that's, I mean, that's the difference, though, is that, you know, okay, so if you look at, you know, Brandon Holsworth versus you, Brandon Holsworth would be the movie star, and he would be the actor.
Yeah.
You know?
I'll take that.
Because he's got the grandiose, so, you know, he's just going to, let's see what he's going to do, you know, because he's crazy.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
And to me, it's just more effective, because I just look at it, how would a normal person handle it? How would they say it? And they would say it that way. They wouldn't say, hoo-ah, and they wouldn't be, who can handle the truth? I want the truth.
Yeah.
It's like, come on. And that's what ruined Color of Money for me, even though I like the movie still. You know, Newman's just being Newman.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's acting. I mean, he's not, you know, not saying he's playing himself by any means, but he's just, you know, he's there. He's being the movie. He's acting the part. And here's Tom Cruise, you know, fake crying, fake. It's just, I can't. But yet, you know, I'll go on IMDb every now and then, and people just rip this so-called under actor. Can't act. What do you mean he can't act? That's the stupidest thing I've ever heard. I mean, even, I'm not a Keanu Reeves fan. Keanu Reeves can act. He's not the greatest by any means at all. But he's been effective in a lot of roles.
Yeah.
And usually, you know, I've said it on episodes. Robin Williams. Can't stand his comedy. It's just too over the top, too, drives me nuts.
But when
you get him
drama,
in a serious movie, love him. Yeah. He plays it perfect.
Yep. What Dreams May Come.
Dead Poets
Awakenings.
Society.
Yeah.
Yeah. Awesome.
World According to Garp.
Yeah.
By George Roy.
Yeah. And I don't like Harrison Ford because the way he treated you, because he's a dick.
Yeah.
But I like a lot of Harrison Ford movies, and he's the same way.
Yeah, he's definitely an under actor. Yeah.
He doesn't overdo anything. It's just, it's there. And to me, that's my thing. I want that in a performance. And then I'll say, wow, that was a well-acted performance.
Yeah. To me, I mean, Harrison Ford, you know, when I was a kid, I loved him in Star Wars because he was Han Solo. But then I saw Blade Runner, and I'm like, that's like next level shit.
Yeah.
Because he really, you know, he just played the role. He didn't overdo anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he played against Rutger Hauer, which Rutger Hauer was great in that as well.
Yeah.
And, he's a great actor. I think Rutger Hauer's a really good actor. But he does overact in some roles. But for that role, it was perfect. And they played off each other very well.
Yeah.
Daryl Hannah. Probably one of the better acted roles from her.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, just if you got the right director, you got the right actor, you play it well, it's very effective in putting you in that movie instead of taking you out of it.
Right.
You get someone like Jack Nicholson who can do well in some roles, but other roles, it's so over the top that it just takes you right out of that, you know, into a, like, you know, you're just watching Nicholson just go crazy, you know. So,
and
The Shining, it was one of the biggest overacted movies ever.
Yeah.
I mean, to me, I just like, his performance is awful. People are like, it's great. I'm like, no, he's awful.
No,
he's just awful in
great.
That movie.
Yeah. Here's Johnny. And that was an ad lib. And it's like, really? It's not even funny. It was supposed to be this funny tension breaker, but yet still be intense. And it was, And man, I'm going to say something. It's going to get me in trouble.
You're going to take hell?
Yeah.
All right, what?
I think One Flew Over the Cuckoo's Nest is one of the most overrated movies of all time.
Yeah.
I don't like his performance in that. It's
other people's performances in that.
First of all, it's a ripoff of Cool Hand Luke. I mean, it's the same movie, just in a hospital as opposed to in a prison camp. It's the same movie.
I like Brad Dourif in that movie.
Brad Dourif is great. Who's the Indian guy? Loved his part. Even Nurse Ratched was overdone.
Yeah.
She's way overdone. I'm not saying it's a bad movie. I just think, for the accolades it gets, it's kind of like, really? It's not that great.
So here's a list from What Culture of some of the most awesome examples of overacting. Number 10, William Shatner from Wrath of Khan.
Yeah.
The whole Khan, screaming Khan thing. Now, I will give him props for taking it a different direction with when Spock died. I thought that was very effective. You know, he did very little.
Cool.
He cried. It was, you know, it wasn't over the top.
Yeah.
That was a good moment for him.
And he's great on TV, like The Practice or whatever that show was he was on. He was great.
Yeah, Boston Legal.
Yeah.
Another big example here is Nicolas Cage in anything he's in.
Yeah.
He's a giant over-actor.
Yeah.
You know, he's effective in some films. Like, I love Raising Arizona. I think it's a great movie. He's hilarious in that. Al Pacino in Scarface, big overacting. Yeah, Pretty much anything Al Pacino's in, he's going to overact in. With the exception of maybe, like, super early stuff. You know, they list Michael Sheen from the Twilight series. I've never seen the Twilight movie, so I can't speak to that. Kevin Spacey, Superman Returns. Very overacting.
Yeah, but he was playing Gene Hackman, though. He wasn't playing Lex Luthor.
Jack Nicholson, The Shining, made the list. Good. Yay, I'm not crazy on that.
Well, I didn't think you were.
John Malkovich in Con Air. Everybody in Con Air.
Yeah.
I think the one that acted the least in that movie was probably Steve Buscemi, you know?
Or Cusack. He didn't really.
Yeah, Cusack.
But Cusack's an under-actor, too.
Yeah, he is, yeah. He's very effective as an under-actor, so.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, you know, they list two different scenes from Shatner from Wrath of Khan. Wow. They really don't like him in that.
Well, because he acts like this.
Exactly, yeah.
He's but,
Jack Nicholson and The Departed, also listed.
Yeah, that whole movie was overacting.
Yeah.
Almost Michelle any Scorsese Pfeiffer. Movie to me.
Michelle Pfeiffer in Batman Returns. And really,
yeah,
you know.
She looked good, though. So
she looks great in that, yeah. But I mean, I think Danny DeVito goes over the top in that as well.
Yeah,
but I think, and Michael Keaton's the only one that doesn't, you know, because he just kind of plays it, he plays it off the cuff. And
well, I heard an actor say about, like, Henry Fonda was a great actor. And he's also an under actor, too. But he's a great, effective actor. But he was calculated.
Yeah.
And he would always, a lot of the same co-stars, he would let them be the over-actors so that he could be the man of sensible, you know, the sensible guy and everything. And it was calculated that, because that's what he liked. He liked to play the laconic role because he knew that was where he was the most effective.
Yeah.
You know, you wouldn't say Charles Bronson's a great actor by any means, but Bronson was very understated and yet effective at the same time. Here's one, I'm going to throw out a name.
Okay.
I think he's a great actor, period. But I also think he's an under-actor, and I think that's kind of why I like him. But Tom Hanks. You don't see Tom Hanks overdo it much. But there's no way Tom Hanks is not considered an effective, very good actor. Now, you know, I almost didn't see Forrest Gump because I saw the trailer. And that voice was driving me crazy in the trailer. I was like, I don't want to hear him talk like that whole movie. That's going to suck.
Yep.
But he didn't overdo it. It seemed like he was going to overdo it by the way the trailer played. But no, that was his voice. That was his character. And he was awesome. And I can't imagine any other actor playing Forrest Gump than Tom Hanks. He was just that good.
Yeah.
To pull off that stupid voice, that stupid accent, to play so-called dumb, whatever he was.
Yeah.
But what a great performance. Mm. But he didn't overact that in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
But, yeah, there's... And I love Nicholson, and it's hard to rip on Nicholson, but he does overdo it a lot.
He does, One of my favorites when I was growing up, as far as an actor is concerned in this particular movie, Jose Ferrer in the black and white version of
Cyrano.
Cyrano, yeah.
Okay.
Oh, that was a great role for him.
Yeah.
Just very understated, very, you know, it's just right there, man. Great acting.
Awesome.
I love Jose Ferrer as an actor. And
Debbie Boone's father-in-law, by the way.
And he did a movie with Jack Black is one of these guys that always overacts.
Yeah.
But there's Jack Black romantic comedy that he did called the Holiday or something like that. I think.
Oh
it was.
Yeah, with the
Where they trade houses.
Yeah.
They trade houses and it's like
Cameron Diaz.
Yeah, Cameron Diaz. Yeah, they trade houses.
And I always get Cameron Diaz and Queen Latifah mixed up.
Yeah, but they look exactly like. You know. One's got a big old booty. But anyway, but Jose Ferrer's in this. And we watched it recently with my family, and my daughter saw it. And she's like, "Who is that old man? He's awesome." She's like, "He's just so good. I just love him." You know, it was Jose Ferrer playing this role of he played like a old Hollywood guy who wrote screenplays.
Had to have been
and
his
stuff.
Last movie.
It was one of his last movies, and he's so great in it. It just reminded me how awesome he was.
Yeah.
God, that guy's fucking.
Well,
cool,
I never thought his name would ever come up on the show, but Jose Ferrer's great. Yeah,
Jose
absolutely,
Ferrer, great actor.
Yeah,
great actor. From those old school, you know, guys.
George Clooney's uncle.
Yeah. No shit. I didn't know that.
Yeah, Jose Ferrer was married to Rosemary Clooney.
Yep. Now, he did overact in Dune, but I think everybody overacted in Dune.
That's...
I think anything that that director does just tells people to go crazy. Like, you know, what's his name from Blue Velvet? You know,
Dennis Hopper.
Dennis Hopper. I mean, just the king
of
the
Hopper can overact big time. But a lot of times it's really effective, though. But we mentioned True Romance in the last episode.
Mm-hmm.
That scene in the where he's getting.
It was Eli Wallach. I was wrong. Eli Wallach.
Not Jose Ferrer.
Yeah, not Jose Ferrer. Eli Wallach was in The Holiday.
Okay. All right.
But I like them both. I mean, they're both good.
Right.
Eli Wallach overacted in Good, the Bad, and the Ugly.
Yeah.
But, you know, he does good stuff in there. But Eli Wallach really did a great job in The Holiday, so check that out. But Jose Ferrer in Dune, yeah, way overacting.
Way overacting. And he was good in Cyrano.
But, I did like him in The Evil That Men Do. That's another, that movie.
Jose Ferrer was in that, wasn't he?
Yes, he was. Wow. Yes, he was.
Wow. Now, to clarify, just because you underact doesn't mean you're effective. You can underact and be terrible.
Yeah, of course. You know?
But one of my worst pet peeves I hear sometimes is I'll hear people say, well, he's just playing himself. Mm. You know, they never say that about somebody who's not a superstar.
There's a difference between an actor and a movie star.
But Kevin Costner always plays himself. Okay, he's a superstar because that means you're already thinking of him as you're watching Kevin Costner, not watching a movie. That happens. John Wayne, you're watching John Wayne, you're not watching, you know, that happens. You never hear someone say, oh, Steve Zahn's playing himself. You know, because nobody knows who the hell Steve Zahn is other than he's just an actor.
Yeah.
You know, so it's actually a compliment when someone says that, because that means you've achieved a high level of success. Mm-hmm. I just always take offense when I hear someone say that, because that means that they're not putting anything into their role, and that's bullshit, because they are. Mel Gibson, very understated, but yet can go over the top when he has to.
Lethal Weapon, yeah.
Lethal Weapon stuff, but he's supposed to. Certain scenes in What Women Want, he kind of gets a little crazy. But for the most part, Mel Gibson's very...
Anything he's in that he directs, he kind of goes over the top, like Man with No Face and the Braveheart.
Braveheart and stuff like that.
Yeah. But he can do understated roles. He just doesn't do them that often.
Right.
I don't think he'll ever win an Oscar or anything like that, but, you know, he's a good actor. He became a good actor.
Yeah. Do you get where I'm saying? I think you kind of agree a little bit, at least.
I do. I totally agree. Yeah.
There are times when it's called for, especially if it's you're a bad guy in an action flick. Yeah, I can see you overacting there because that's kind of fun. Dennis Hopper, big time.
In Speed.
Speed, Waterworld.
Everything else that he did.
Yeah. But it's fun, and it's just cool to watch, you know. Warren Beatty. Okay, now here's a guy that I think is definitely a movie star, although look at his IMDb. What do you do, like 14 movies? He's not done. His scale of movies is tiny for someone of his stature. But his movies, most of them were hits, so he didn't really have to do anything. So
he did a lot of producing. Mm-hmm. I think that's really kind of where he
and directing,
kind of found
he's a
his,
big-time director.
Yeah, he did Reds and everything, and, you know, he's got 32 movies, you know, he doesn't have 32, that many
But since, what, 64 or something?
Yeah. So
did he start out on? Dobie Gillis? Is that where he started?
Yeah, cause some kind of theater stuff, Suspicion, Playhouse 90, Dobie Gillis, mm-hmm. Yeah. Splendor in the Grass was his first film in 61.
Mm-hmm.
And then...
So in 55 years, he's done 32 movies.
Yep. Didn't really have a whole lot of things until Bonnie and Clyde. That kind of brought him out.
Mm-hmm.
McCabe and Miss Miller.
Good Western, by the way.
Parallax View was probably my favorite movie.
Which one?
Parallax View.
I haven't seen that. Really cool flick.
Shampoo, I never saw because I was a kid when it came out. Heaven Can Wait, I remember liking
that.
Love
that movie.
Reds, which was boring. Mm-hmm. Ishtar, which was actually funny. Most people hate that movie, but I thought it was pretty funny.
I liked Ishtar.
Yeah.
And I don't like Dustin Hoffman. I liked that movie.
Dick Tracy. Ugh.
Say, Dustin Hoffman's an overactor to me, too.
Yeah, he is, yeah. Mm-hmm. Bugsy, A Love Affair, Bullworth, Larry Sanders Show, Town and Country.
Town and Country is one of the biggest bombs.
Yeah, that was a big, giant bomb, yeah. Dick Tracy was hard to watch. I don't know.
The visual in it was just, it hurt my eyes watching that movie. And Madonna looked great back then, and I wasn't even a Madonna fan, but she looked great, but it was
The movie was just like eye rot. It was awful. But people liked it. It did well. Remember it doing well at the box office, so.
Bugsy was pretty solid with him.
Yeah, Bugsy was good. Bugsy was good.
Yeah.
But, you know, again, he was just a good-looking guy who happened to make movies, and women liked him a lot. Yeah. So he was the Tom Jones of movies, basically.
Yeah. Exactly.
I don't really know. I mean, can you name 5 Tom Jones songs?
Probably
What's
5.
What's New Pussycat?
What's New Pussycat? Delilah.
Nope, you're done. See?
Help Yourself.
You can't list...
Just Help Yourself.
You can't list Kiss, because that was a remake. You remember when he came back with that one?
Yeah.
Wow.
Did a song called Say You'll Stay Till Tomorrow. My mom used to play that song all the time. So that's 4. I got to do one more. I know I'm missing an easy one. That's enough.
Well, there you go.
There we go. So I did 4.
Tom Jones and Warren Beatty. Separated the hip. One actor, one music. But no, it's just, I don't know. You know, there's definitely a definitive movie star and an actor. And
but you can be both, but you still don't have to be over.
Yeah.
Ray Liotta's an over actor, but I do like him.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, he's a big over actor.
Yeah.
But, you know, I think he's effective in some roles. I really like – he overacted like crazy in Something Wild, but I thought he was really good in it. Mm-hmm. And another actor that's an underactor that I think does very well is Jeff Daniels. Jeff Daniels is one of these guys
– But he's considered like an actor.
He can jump between, you know, comedy and drama and do very well with them.
But I think
and,
he's great.
He is great. Great. I can't – I like seeing that. I like watching movies with the guy. He's you know, he's easy to watch.
I know it's a movie you're not supposed to say on a guy show, but he was awesome in terms of endearment.
Yeah,
I mean, he's a dick. I mean, he couldn't stand
it. See, Deborah Winger, can't take her, and I can't take, what's her name?
Shirley MacLaine.
Shirley MacLaine. No. Oh, big overactor. Big overactor.
And Nicholson overacted in it, but that made the movie a little bit because that movie needed some energy, and Nicholson gave that movie the energy it had. Mm. But Jeff Daniels was such an ass in that movie. God.
Yes, he was.
Lithgow is great. Lithgow's an overactor. John Lithgow's an overactor, but he's good in certain roles.
Yeah.
He was great in Garp. He was great in
See, Terms. I don't think he overacted in Garp, but he definitely overacted in like a lot of the stuff he did in the 80s, like in the 90s, like Ricochet with Denzel Washington and Cliffhanger. You know,
yes,
just like
he was so
way overacted.
Oh, yeah.
But he's great at comedy. I loved 30 Rock.
Sun. Third Rock from the Sun.
Yeah, was great.
Hilarious.
He was fantastic in that.
Yeah. Harry and the Hendersons.
Harry and the Hendersons. I cried at the end of that stupid movie.
Really?
I was a kid, so, you know, I'll take it. But it's a crap movie, but, you know, when he's trying to tell Sasquatch to go, and he's like, you got to leave, go! I was like, oh, don't make Sasquatch leave! Best Bigfoot movie ever made.
Exactly. Except for that one with Michael Rooker that we can't
find. because it doesn't exist.
I know I did not dream that. I swear to God, I watched that. Anyway.
I think he was just talking about making Walking Dead, and he just said, yeah,
this is... Oh, that's what I was going to ask you. What is this Fear of the Walking Dead?
So it's the new, it's the prequel show to Walking Dead, so it's like how the zombie outbreak started.
Oh, okay.
It's a whole another city and a whole different family and all this other stuff. So
you watching?
Yeah, I've been watching it, yeah.
Isn't it good?
I mean, it's good so far, yeah.
Okay.
It's good. It's just different, you know. It's a different vibe because it's the start of the apocalypse thing. And
there's a new Netflix show.
Yeah, what's that?
Narcos, have you heard about this?
I've heard about it. Yeah, I've heard it's really good.
Thinking we might that might be this next TV show we watch at the same time. You know, kind of.
Everybody's been talking about that in the cigar shops, man. Just all over the place talking about
Narcos. It's about the Pablo Escobar rise to his...
So is it a documentary or is it a show?
No, it's a show.
Oh, okay.
It's
it is a show.
Yeah, it's a show.
All right. I'll have to check it out then.
Mm-hmm.
Check that out. So here's an actor that I think is... he does both. He can teeter the line between overacting and underacting. And I think he's effective at both. Vincent D'Onofrio.
Yeah.
Vincent D'Onofrio is very good in certain roles and then just crazy off the wall in other roles.
Yeah.
There's another guy that does that a lot, too, and I'm trying to think of it. Oh, Gary Oldman.
Gary
Oldman's another one that can be very good, understated, you know, under actor.
Mm-hmm.
And then other times it's like, what the hell are you doing?
Yeah,
just goes crazy.
Yeah.
But D'Onofrio really sold. I know you're not going to ever watch this, but there's a Daredevil Netflix show. And he plays Kingpin, and it is so cool. His characterization of that character is awesome. Just the way he plays it, very understated and very misunderstood guy, and you kind of feel for him. He's a bad guy, but he's also a bastard, and it's just he does such a great job with that role. Such a great job. It's probably the best Marvel thing to come out in, like, years.
Yeah.
Which says a lot, because there's a lot of good Marvel stuff out there now. I know you don't make a big fan, but...
No, I've liked some of D'Onofrio's stuff. It was funny you mentioned his name, because I'm... thought of that guy's name in years and for some reason I was looking up Adventures in Babysitting on IMDb today. I had no idea why that popped.
He was Thor.
I think someone and I was like, Vincent D'Onofrio was in that? What? And I looked and went, oh, that's right, he was Thor.
That was the that was the movie he did after Full Metal Jacket. When
really?
He gained a ton of weight from Full Metal Jacket. He wasn't a fat guy. He gained all that weight for that movie. Because Kubrick's like, you're my guy, gain weight.
Mm-hmm.
So he gained weight for that role. And then he lost it all and got all cut and big for the Thor role for Adventures of Babysitter.
He's in it for like 5 minutes.
I know, right? You know. He's one of those guys. It's like, I'll do it for the role, cool, whatever. You know. So.
Oh, I know what it was. They were talking about, I saw a list on Facebook. It was like actresses that... got their start playing ugly roles and they're now attractive, kind of. That was the theme of this thing.
Okay.
And the chick that she goes to pick up at the downtown and the with the glasses, lost her glasses. And, you know, she looked real kind of
mousy.
Yeah. Penelope Ann Miller is who that was.
Oh, really?
And she turned out to be really hot.
Yeah, she was hot.
Great body. What's that movie? She was a stripper and she was really
hot. Yeah, I know what you're talking about, yeah.
But
she looked good in The Shadow.
Yeah.
It's another actor that can go both ways, Alec Baldwin.
Yeah, I love him in comedy. I don't like him anything
in
else.
Dramatic stuff.
Yeah, but I love him in comedy.
I like
he gets comedy. He gets comedy. Oh, he's good in The Shadow,
yeah.
He gets comedy, and I like that. I don't like him as a person, but I like his comedy. He's very good.
Yeah.
When he's on Saturday Night Live, it's gold. He's awesome on Saturday Night Live. Mm-hmm. I could not get into
30 Rock.
30 Rock.
I love 30 Rock. 30
I couldn't
Rock's
get
great.
Into it. Couldn't
it's
get
such
into
a great
it.
Show.
Wanted to. Wanted to like it. Tracy Morgan ruined that for me.
Yeah.
I just didn't like his character. Tina Fey. I can take her.
I like her. I like her.
I used to like her a lot.
Yeah.
She's just kind of worn on me. She hasn't changed at all. It's just the same shtick that she's just been doing.
Yeah.
But, you know.
Steve Carell is another, like, under slash over. He can go both ways, but yeah. He is very good at the drama.
In his comedy, he's real over the top, but his drama's very...
Well, yeah, I mean, give him a role that he's supposed to be over the top. Yeah. Like in Anchorman, he's going to go crazy.
Oh, yeah.
Like stuff like, you know, Dan in Real Life and, you know.
Good
crazy,
movie. Very underrated
stupid
movie.
Love. Yeah.
But Crazy Stupid Love. Yeah, he goes over the top at times, you know, when he's sitting at the bar screaming about his wife's having intercourse.
right.
That's a great movie. But anyway, so that's my rant. Just because an actor underacts doesn't mean they're not effective and that they that they're not practicing their craft. They are to me, they're actually doing it better. Because anybody can be over the top. That's just easy to do.
Yeah.
You know?
It's finding the true voice of the character and presenting that on screen is what I think a good actor does. It's you know, taking it from the page and presenting it in a way that seems natural. And that's the hard part, I think. And
well, you told that story about Nicholson. Who was that guy?
Yeah, it was Nicholson and Pollock, yeah.
Yeah.
It was like Nicholson was telling Pollock that you'd done it. He goes, you're doing it, man. You're doing what people are paying thousands and thousands of dollars to learn. It's the art of acting without acting.
Yeah.
Like, you're there. He's like,
that's cool.
It's just way cool to hear from Nicholson.
Yeah.
And Nicholson's like, going crazy in the movie.
Yep. So that's my theory.
He does smoke cigars in Fugitive Men as well.
He does. That's
right. When that scene when what's his name walks up and talks to him, and Tom Cruise is talking to him, he's like smoking, puffing on a cigar the whole time.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Before the trial. So, yeah.
Awesome.
That's one we'll have to watch. But what are we doing next week? We're going to go ahead and...
We're going to do one of my favorite comedy classics.
Oh, yeah?
At least it's a classic to me.
Oh, yeah? What's that?
Uncle Buck.
Uncle Buck!
With John Candy, the late, great, awesome John Candy.
Yeah, John Candy's awesome, yeah.
And he smokes cigars throughout the whole freaking movie.
He does, yeah. We're not even going to count the times because it's just... if he's in the screen,
he's smoking a cigar.
He smokes Lanceros, too, I believe. So, yeah. So that's great. So, yeah, check us out next week for Uncle Buck. Give it a watch if you haven't seen it. If you have seen it, watch it again because it's one of the greats.
It's awesome.
One of the best John Candy movies
ever
made.
And one of the last great John Hughes movies, too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. All right. So where can they find us, Randy?
We are on iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spreaker, Stitcher, Podcastland, Podomatic, Facebook, YouTube, and Twitter. I'm at RandyRankin43 on Twitter.
At Captain Funky Pants. And check us out on Twitter as well at CigarsInCinema, all one word,
I-N,
cinema.
Yep.
And also on Instagram at CigarsInCinema.
There you go.
All right. So, hey, as always, it's been great smoking with you guys.
See you later, Brandon.
See you later, Randy.